You're listening to Focal Point on GraceNetRadio.com. Phone lines are open at area code 954-776-7705 or 1-800-903-9234. Now, back to your host of Focal Point, Jerry Newcomb on GraceNetRadio.com.
Well, I'll tell you what, one of my all-time favorite guests, I love to interview this guy, is Dr. Paul Kanger of Grove City College. He's written a lot of great books, including God and Ronald Reagan, which is probably my favorite book that he wrote. But he's also written a book that was highlighted in that recent movie, 2016, Obama's America. In fact, if you saw the movie 2016, Obama's America, you saw our next guest. His name is Dr. Paul Kanger. Now, here's a question for you, folks. If you had to think about it in terms of news reporting, during the days of Ronald Reagan, do you remember how much was made about the homeless population and how the homeless population supposedly skyrocketed under Reagan? It was Reagan's fault. Reagan was bad. But today, do you hear much about the homeless population, the homeless problems, in contrast to today's current administration? Well, to kind of deal with the facts about this whole issue is Dr. Paul Kanger. Paul, are you there?
Jerry, I am. How are you?
Oh, doing great. Thank you. Always a pleasure. And congratulations on your role in that movie. That was a surprise blockbuster hit of a movie, and it was really fantastic, and you did a wonderful job. And he's the guy that was wearing all red, if you remember that, red sweater.
That's right. I was talking about a guy who was all red, Frank Marshall Davis, Barack Obama's mentor, who was a literal card-carrying member of the Communist Party, if you can actually believe that.
Oh, really? What was his number?
It was 47544. I know that off the top of my head, and it's quite unprecedented to have a president, I could say that's never happened before, who had a mentor who was not just a communist, but an actual full-blown pro-Soviet party member.
Well, that's a card-carrying member of the Communist Party USA, correct?
Right.
Well, there's a difference, right? Well, what's the difference?
Well, there's really not. I mean, anybody, if you join Communist Party USA, then you literally swore yourself to what Communist Party USA called a Soviet America. And as the actual Communist Party pledge from the 1930s said, you pledged yourself to, quote, ensure the triumph of Soviet power in the United States, unquote. So, I mean, you were, and this is the difference, Jerry. You had a lot of people, well, not a lot, but you had some people who were far left enough that they were a communist, you know, small c communist ideology, but they weren't quite willing to be so pro-Stalin and pro-Soviet that they would actually join Communist Party USA. I mean, it was a rare bird that actually joined the American Party. But Frank Marshall Davis was so extreme that he was one of them. He did it.
Well, in President Obama's one of his books, I think it's Dreams of My Father, he talks about this man named Frank who had gin on his breath in Hawaii that his grandfather put him in touch with to be a mentor. And he met with him on several occasions. I believe you've said 22 occasions or something like that. And so it's very significant that, unfortunately, as Barack Obama didn't really have positive male role models in his background, this was a man that helped fill in the gap. But he was a card-carrying member of the Communist Party.
Well, yeah, and he didn't really have any good positive influences in his family, especially, I mean, politically, all the influences were negative. I had somebody email me last week, and this is going to sound really incendiary to people who are listening, but hear me out. Someone emailed me and said, would you consider President Obama to be a red diaper baby, right? and I thought, it's funny because I feel these questions all the time. I mean, people ask me, you know, they ask me if Obama himself is a communist. These are questions I get every day because of the research I do and what I've written. And I said, you know, I never thought about it, but a red diaper baby is somebody who was raised by parents, mentors, grandparents who were either party members or believers in communism or sympathetic or fellow travelers. And I said, well, you know, frankly, by that definition, Barack Obama actually was. He was raised by those types. Now there are, I mean, David Horowitz was a red diaper baby, and you know now he's the ultimate anti-communist. So that doesn't mean that you're raised that way and you believe it now, but it's a rather astonishing point, and again gets to our president's rearing and upbringing and influences that he was raised in an environment where you could actually call President Obama a red diaper baby. Mm.
Paul, how old are you? You're in your 40s?
I'm 45.
Okay. All right. You're young enough that you could understand this question I'm about to ask. I don't think, especially younger people today, grasp the reality of the what the communist threat really was. It's almost like a joke. It's like if we watch something today and it's dealing with some, past historical thing, it's almost like something with Monty Python or something where they'll just make a joke about it. But how serious was the communist threat? What was its significance?
Oh, it was bad news. I mean, if you read the Communist Manifesto by Marx, came out in 1848. If you read any of the founding documents of the Soviet Union, 1917 through the 20s, the Communist International, the Comintern, they all said that there could only be one goal for communists, and that was global communist revolution. So, I mean, they wanted a communist party in every country in the world, just one, and all those communist parties would answer to Moscow. And all those parties agreed to that. The American Communist Party agreed to that. They would be subservient to Moscow. And then in the end, they would literally conspire to overthrow the ruling class or, the rulers in their own country and to create this single one-world communist state. That was truly the goal of this. And of course, that was an ideology that never took more than a few dozen countries, but even with that, killed over 100 million people in the 20th century. That's twice the combined death tolls of World War I and World War II. So this was really a pernicious, truly evil, destructive, murderous ideology, and to imagine that there were some Americans who signed on to it is terrifying. But there were, and one of them, Frank Marshall Davis, helped influence the current president of the United States.
Now, of course, Obama would not agree with some of the more pernicious aspects of communism. Correct?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I would hope so. I mean, certainly. But one of the funny things about him, though, Jerry, and consider that he's probably about 5 years older than I am. He was born in 1961. He lived through this period, and there's nothing from Obama in two memoirs or even from interviews that he's done with people where he talks about, being in college in the 1980s and being inspired by, Reagan's Berlin Wall speech or the Brandenburg Gate speech, or about how evil communism was and how good it was that we survived it. There's nothing like that at all. In fact, quite the contrary, as I lay out in the book, there are eyewitness accounts of people like Dr. John Drew, who knew Obama at Occidental, who will tell you that he was a Marxist at Occidental at the time. And there's no repudiation of that. I'm not saying that means he hasn't repudiated it, but there's nothing like that on the record.
You wonder, I mean, and I don't want to get into any realm of speculation here, but you wonder why those college records are still sealed, even though Donald Trump now has said, Mr. Obama, if you unseal those records, I'll give you $5 million to whatever charity you choose. You wonder why records would be sealed unless he had something to hide that, he was embarrassed by, which would be either studies related to Marxism or something, or studies related to Islam or something. I don't know. It's just bizarre.
Right. Well, and I wondered, I called Occidental because I wanted to know if maybe there was a letter of recommendation from Frank Marshall Davis, because Davis is the last person that Obama spoke to, and it's laid out right there in Dreams from My Father before he headed off to Occidental. And by the way, Jerry, I wouldn't expect Obama to accept that deal anyway, because Obama doesn't give money to charity. He only gives about 1% of his income to charity, as does Joe Biden. And, Mitt Romney gives about 30%. And actually, Obama and Biden giving 1%, that's actually about typical for most liberals.
Wow.
Liberals don't give money to charity. They give very, very, very little money to charity. And they redefine charity rather as the government coming in and forcibly taking money from people who have more money than others and giving that to welfare programs. That's how liberals define charity and social justice.
You know, everything you just said is actually documented.
Right.
Everything is documented in a book by Arthur Brooks, who's now the president of American Enterprise Institute, mm-hmm. called Who Really Cares? And it's
right.
fascinating. All right, now, speaking
Makers
of that...
Makers also is another book that documents it.
What's it called, what?
Makers and Takers by Peter Schweizer.
Makers and Takers. How do you spell Schweizer?
Schweizer, S-C-H-W-E-I-Z-E-R.
Okay, Makers and
Just
Takers.
Google Makers and Takers and
we'll
on
have
Amazon.
To...
Go to Amazon. It's the only book with that title.
All right, and speaking of the down and out and the unfortunate, the less fortunate, we remember back during the days of Ronald Reagan, there were lots of news reports about the homeless population, and we don't really hear much in the same way during the Obama years about the homeless population. So one would conclude or could easily surmise that homelessness is not as much of a problem today as it was back then. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, the only difference today is that the liberal media has quit paying attention to it because the president is a liberal and not a conservative. That's the only thing that's happened. When Reagan was president, liberals were talking as if there were literally millions of homeless stacked like cordwood on every street corner, rotting and dying and wasting away in the streets. And in fact, you'll remember this because you lived through it as I did, the late homeless advocate Mitch Snyder.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, remember him?
Yeah, he said there were 3 million homeless. He said that during the Reagan years.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly right. And we know that, in fact, it was about 300,000. In fact, when Reagan was up for re-election at this point in his presidency, a report had come out by HUD, Housing and Urban Development, which said that on any given night in America, there are about 250,000 to 350,000 homeless. Now, and yet that didn't stop the media from having regular nightly homeless updates. Dan Rather talked about it constantly. Peter Jennings was pushing it on ABC, Tom Brokaw on NBC. You know, Phil Donahue would go out and find this, you know, some gorgeous, brilliant, saintly mother of four with a degree, with a PhD in astrophysics, who was living in a dumpster in Southeast D.C. somewhere, right? and it was used as an incredible propaganda item by the left.
Huh.
And in fact, I went back and I checked last night, Jerry. Lou Cannon documents in his book on Reagan, his biography, that Reagan had been president only a few months. And already at that point, liberals were building what they called Reagan ranches, kind of Reagan Hooverville, shanty towns right outside of the White House. So you know, they were already starting this. As soon as Reagan came into the presidency, basically, they were out using the homeless as an issue. But now we learn from a report called The State of Homelessness in America 2012, there are about 640,000 homeless under Obama, which is over double the number under Reagan, and yet the left doesn't talk about it at all.
Now, first of all, we need to put this in perspective. I mean, this is a human nightmare, whether it's 300,000 or 600,000.
Yes.
It's still, I mean, it's an incredible tragedy. And I do know, I remember talking to a Catholic priest one time, or maybe he was a deacon or something, that worked with the homeless people. And I remember one of the things he said is, boy, I tell you, when a person first starts to become homeless, please, that's when you really need to do whatever you can to keep them from remaining homeless, because the longer they stay on the streets, the more they get used to it in a perverse way and build up defenses and so forth that prevent them from readjusting to society. So there's a window there where you really want to do everything you can, whether it's organizationally or through churches or whatever, to keep that person from remaining homeless. But bottom line, this is a human tragedy any way you look at it.
Yeah, it really is. Which tells you that if liberals and the liberal media actually cared about the homeless, they'd still be talking about it right now.
Mm.
But in fact, they quit. You remember this too. They quit talking about the homeless when Bill Clinton became president. And I have a prediction for you. If Mitt Romney wins, the homeless will be back. They will be back. They'll be on the news. especially as the economy starts to really take off under Romney, which it will, and it just has to. I mean, it's going to recover, and with Obamacare being moved out of the way, everything else. But with the economy growing under Romney, the left will have to find a way to demonize the economy, as it did under Reagan. So I predict, one, homelessness will be back, and two, they'll also start the whole greed thing again. You know, they called the 1980s the decade of greed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think both of those things will come back. And in fact, neither will be new, neither will be resurgent. They'll just be resurgent in the media. And, you know, the media creates perception. And then for a lot of the public, perception becomes reality.
And in reality, the homeless population may actually go down, but as you say, the reports about it would go up. Didn't Ronald Reagan say something like the best cure for poverty is a job? Something to that effect?
Exactly right, too. I mean, if you there's no better poverty program than a growing economy. And if you want, you got 47 million Americans on food stamps right now, which is up from 32 million 4 years ago. And I mean,
that's a lot.
People are listening. Think about that. 47 million on food stamps. There are 300 million Americans. So it's one in every six Americans is on food stamps. One in every six is on food stamps.
Yeah.
That's astonishing. So if you want to change that, you don't increase welfare benefits. You grow the economy. You get people jobs. You know, that's the way to turn that around.
All right. Now, I would say, as far as the homelessness, I'm 56. And when I was growing up, this was never even an issue. I mean, you never even thought about it or whatever. And it started to become an issue, as you say, when the media would point it out when President Reagan was around. But isn't it true that I think there's two factors that would add to it, as well as obviously economic difficulties, which those come and go. Okay. But two factors would be, one, the breakdown of the family being a major, major cause of homelessness, and then also the closing of many mental institutions. And by the way, a third factor, of course, would be substance abuse, because a lot of the people who especially the people who are homeless in a perpetual way, a lot of times it has something to either do with the drugs or alcohol. But comment on the mental institutions, if you would, because that's a factor we just hardly ever hear about.
Oh, that's right. And in fact, I'll tell you a little story. At the time when this was first building up, I was in college, University of Pittsburgh, in the late 1980s, and I was a science major. I was a pre-med major. I had no interest in politics at all. And I was seeing homeless people for the first time in my life, and I remember saying to one of the campus liberals who was, you know, protesting, and he said, Reagan is responsible for this. And I said, Reagan's responsible for this? And I remember talking to some of the homeless people. There was one lady who was always prophesying doom and gloom and the apocalypse. And the liberal students, by the way, made fun of her, you know, to show their compassion. But I remember saying, well, how is Reagan responsible for this? So I did what a science major would do. You put your emotions aside and you do research, right? And I called some local homeless shelters. And the first one I called, I asked this woman, I said, well, I understand that this is the fault of Ronald Reagan. And she reprimanded me. She said, young man, I don't know what they're teaching you at college, but this has nothing to do with Ronald Reagan. These people are mentally ill. And I said, oh, okay, all right. So I kind of wrote that down. I called another homeless shelter, got the same kind of response. And I wrote it up as a letter that I sent to the campus newspaper. The editor called me back. The editor turned out was a conservative and said, we'd like to run this as an opinion piece. I said, great, go ahead. They ran it as an opinion piece, and for the first time in my life, Jerry, I was called a racist, a fascist, a Nazi, everything you can imagine, just for writing this op-ed piece.
Wow.
Which basically argued that you know, it was called something like the homeless aren't Reagan's fault. But this is, there's a number of different causes, and that's what the people at these homeless shelters told me. That, you know, it wasn't Reagan. Most of them were probably mentally ill, or suffering from alcoholism, substance abuse, things like that.
Well, I used to live in Elgin, Illinois for a couple of years, and I remember there was a gigantic facility for the mentally ill in Elgin, Illinois, and it closed down sometime in the 1980s. And then my son, our son went to Tallahassee at FSU, and he showed us some buildings where the buildings were abandoned since the 1980s, and they used to be hospitals for mentally ill people, including children. And so during the Reagan years, and maybe it's not related to Reagan, I don't know, but a lot of those institutions closed down. I remember reading in William Donahue's book, The Twilight of Liberty, where he talked about the ACLU and a lot of lawsuits against forced hospitalization and so forth, that some of the mental institutions started to basically close down during, you know, during that time. And I remember he used a phrase, the constitutional right to freeze to death. And he was describing how, you know, some of these patients died in yeah. those freezing winters. And a lot of them come down here to South Florida. But it seems to have coincided with the Reagan years, but it wasn't Reagan's fault per se.
Well, I don't know. I've had conservatives tell me that these institutions were closed during the Carter years, and I've had liberals tell me they were closed during the Reagan years. And I don't know exactly what the problem is or what the culprit is. Now, I do know, especially if you look at it now over 30 years, where you know, there's 600-some thousand now compared to 300-some thousand under Reagan. In fact, when Reagan left, it was still only 300,000. So you know, I don't know how that would still be if Reagan's fault, if it had to do with closing these things or not. I know one thing. It's ironic that the more liberal the city, there seem to be more homeless people. Cities like San Francisco.
Oh, well, San Francisco gives stipends to homeless people, so yeah, it becomes a big magnet for them.
Exactly, and I just got back from Santa Barbara, California, which is maybe the most beautiful city on the planet.
Yeah,
weather-wise, everything
is beautiful.
There are just homeless everywhere. I mean, you can't walk down the street for 2 minutes without getting asked for money.
Yeah.
And these are very liberal cities. They're also very rich. They've got a ton of money. So you know, why aren't these compassionate liberals building shelters or providing charity and building homeless shelters? You know, why aren't they doing this? Well, for one thing, liberals give very, very little of their money to charity. So why don't they do it the way they like to do it? Why don't they increase their own taxes and build more homeless shelters? I just find it funny that you have this. It seems a remarkable correlation between the number of wealthy liberals and the number of poor homeless.
In the meantime, I think it's fair to say that a lot of the people actually helping the homeless and doing a lot of the yeoman's work are, frankly, our Christian organizations. You look at Salvation Army, Catholic Charities, Baptist right. groups, rescue missions. They're the ones actually, you know, on the ground doing a lot of the work.
Yeah, in fact, you know, not to toot my own horn here, but and my wife and I, we give food always to the food pantry, the Salvation Army, a whole bunch of other groups. We give money to a group called Light of Life Ministry, and you know, I've had liberals who have emailed me before, and actually liberal Christians. And say, you know, all conservative Christians like you want to talk about when you talk about the gospel is pro-life and helping the unborn. Well, what are you doing for the poor? And I get that. And I think to myself, well, I'm actually doing things for the poor and for the unborn. And then I feel like turning around and saying to them, okay, you're doing things for the poor. What are you doing for the unborn? And I often find that a lot of social justice Christians aren't doing much for the unborn.
I wouldn't even be surprised if they do much actually for the poor.
Yeah.
Per se, you know, other than, well, I pay my taxes. Oh, okay. Thanks
right.
for your generosity.
That's true for the whole New England area, by the way. The probably the wealthiest part of the country is New England, and it's also the least charitable.
Oh, isn't that
interesting? You'll see that in the Makers and Takers book as well.
Oh, that's fascinating. In fact, I just talked to Ron Blue a couple of minutes or about an hour ago doing a television interview for our ministry, and he made the point that it's fascinating, but the wealthier people get, the less they tend to give per capita, which is an interesting point.
Well, and that might correlate, too, to these regions. In fact, New England as a whole has become kind of a microcosm of Western Europe. They've got the lowest attendance rates.
Of church?
Lowest church attendance rates, least charitable giving, highest divorce rates, highest abortion rates.
Wow.
And, I mean, across the board, it looks just like Western Europe.
That's fascinating. Okay.
And the most number of elected Democrats and least number of elected Republicans.
You've already pointed out that the amount of food stamps has increased dramatically under President Obama's administration. What about the homeless population per se? You said now it's about 600,000 something, but did it grow or was that less than it was under President Bush?
Yeah, the numbers according to this report, 2012 Homelessness in America, it was in 2009 it was 643,000 homeless, in 2011 636,000. So it's actually about a 7,000 decrease. And according to the report, that's probably because there have been a reduction of homeless veterans, military veterans, of 8,000. So that seems to offset that. But it's about the same as 2009. Although the report adds that even though it is down 7,000 from 2009, quote, while the homeless population decreased nationally, it increased in 24 states and the District of Columbia, unquote. And I would expect, Jerry, that in 2012 that the numbers are probably actually higher than they were in 2011, especially when you consider the ongoing chronic unemployment. The GDP growth rate for this last quarter of 1.3%, which is really bad, and the recent surge in welfare benefits, which are up like 32% over the last 4 years,
wow.
and food stamps from 32 million to 47 million. So while they're down slightly from 2009 to 2011, I bet they're probably up from 2011 to 2012. But again, no one's even talking about it.
Sure. So, Paul Kanger, you're on record now as predicting that if Mitt Romney becomes the president, all of a sudden we'll start to hear in the media again reports about homelessness, about how bad things are for struggling families. But meanwhile, the economy will take off, Lord willing.
Oh, absolutely. Homelessness and greed will be back.
Okay. Why don't you, we have less than a minute to go. Why don't you go ahead and give your commercials for your website, your books, whatever, just about 30 seconds or so.
Sure. Well, Center for Vision and Values at Grove City College, you can just Google that or go to faithandfreedom.com. And we also, if you'd like to find my book, The Communist, just type in The Communist at Amazon, and there you go.
And you've written God and Ronald Reagan, God and Hillary Clinton. Well, I guess that one's probably...
No one buys that one.
Passé by now.
but no one buys that.
Yeah, but your books are tremendous. There's also The Crusader, which is about Reagan's anti-communist fight. And then there's a really incredible one called Dupes, where you actually read the Soviet, the declassified Soviet transcripts showing that a lot of Americans, unfortunately, worked with the Soviets in promoting communism. Thank you for all you do.
Thank you for all you do. Your show's great.
Oh, you're a great American. Dr. Paul Kanger, thank you now. God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Vocal Point. The views and opinions were those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of GraceNetRadio.com or any of its staff, management, or affiliations. Join us next Thursday at noon for Vocal Point on GraceNetRadio.com.